Until I Can Find Me, a John Shepherd Ficklet Trilogy, written and read by Cookie Mom 6067. Quid pro quo. Todd stepped closer to John. You owe me, John Shepherd. John's thoughts took him back to Kolya's Jedi prison cell, encouraging the prisoner next to him not to give up. My people will come for me. We don't leave our people behind. The cell was damp, dark, and cold, and there were no toilet facilities, so the smell was indescribable. The poor guy next to him had been here for years. When Atlantis came for him, he'd make sure that they got him out, too. John had thought that Kolya's plan was to trade him for C4 or something, that he'd get out fairly soon. He wasn't surprised when they came for him and trussed him up for the cameras. He could not have imagined what came next. The wraith, the pain, the feeling of life and vitality leaving every cell of his body. Elizabeth's horrified. You've gone too far, Kolya. Rodney's panic, please. Finding out that the poor guy in the next cell was the monster that had tortured him was a twist he hadn't been prepared for. You owe me, John Shepherd. John managed to overcome his rage at the wraith long enough to accept his help, escaping, knowing the escape would never have happened without it. John was too far gone, past middle age and closing in on elderly. He watched the monster drain a Jedi guard, while terror and some primeval part of his brain revolted against it. He had no time to react in the woods when the wraith, with a quick, "They're coming," shoved him against the tree and drained him to ancient decrepitude. The creature fought and killed the pursuing Jedi soldiers, then came back to him. He had just enough juice to be bitter. "Finish it," he demanded. "You do not know everything about Wraith, John Shepherd," the thing said as he plunged his feeding hand against John's desiccated chest. Life began to flood back into John's body. He could feel his cells blossom with pregnant potential, life reasserting itself. His heart beat ecstatically, and he screamed with orgasmic chaos, the rush of all rushes, rapture overwhelming him, and John knew why some worshipped the wraith. You owe me, John Shepherd. John hadn't turned his back when the wraith plunged his hand into Henry Wallace's chest. He had dismissed the SOs from the room, but he wouldn't allow squeamishness, or even plausible deniability, to get in the way of witnessing the sacrifice. As Wallace screamed, John stood stoically. He'd done this. He'd talked a man into a horrible suicide in order to save Rodney's sister. The wraith stood up, the dried husk of Henry Wallace at his feet. He met John's hard gaze. I thank you, John Shepherd. John swallowed the bile that threatened to choke him. I didn't do it for you. He went to the door to call the corpsman to remove what was left of Wallace, his cover story ready. You owe me, John Shepherd. I don't owe you anything. Baptism. Sometimes redemption is not to be had, not at any price. With his idealism destroyed by loss and failure in the kiln of Afghanistan, John sought the heat of Nevada, the redemption of being a cop in Sin City. John embraced his identity as a loser and a disgrace, sinking down into the underbelly of Vegas like a heavy stone in a lively river. He was just another bad gambler with an old car and an anemic bank balance. If death was dealt wholesale in Afghanistan, it was strictly retail in Vegas, but it was death all the same. It clung to him like cigarette smoke from the poker table. He had hardened his shell until he felt more like petrified wood than flesh and blood. The deaths of 8 more wouldn't have made a dent in his surface if it were not for the bizarre condition of the bodies, mummified, grotesque, radioactive, and marked with a strange pattern in the center of their chests. And those deaths had led to Mr. Woolsey from the FBI, Dr. Rodney McKay threatening to ruin his already pathetic life, and the weird white-haired creature that had hissed that he could read his future. I'll show you your destiny, John Shepherd. He wondered if the starving, delirious alien had known just how short his future was going to be. I met another version of you once. You were really quite different. The words had been gentle, quiet. At first, McKay's manner had been brusque, almost hostile, threatening John and unsettling him with an insider's knowledge of his life. But the man's eyes had softened when he spoke of the other shepherd, as if comparing John to his doppelganger and judging him deficient. It's amazing how one incident can entirely alter the course of your life. He'd made a decision to make a U-turn on a desert highway, and now the Wraith was dead, his trailer and equipment destroyed, and John was bleeding out under the hot, dry desert sun. John had had nothing to live for, but it seemed he had everything to die for. I'd like to believe you have the same strength of character as that other John Shepherd. John turned his face to the bright blue sky. Sometimes redemption can be had for the ultimate price. The bitterest tears. The bitterest tears shed over graves are for words left unsaid and deeds left undone. Harriet Beecher Stowe. John usually didn't have a lot of time to contemplate the end of his life. During the siege, he'd had minutes between bolting from the chair, "So long, Rodney," to taking off in the jumper with a nuke on board. It was true that the borderline, even genuinely suicidal mission was something he seemed to undertake with above-average frequency, and he hadn't died yet. Today was different. Today he knew he was Earth's last hope, unless Atlantis got here quicker than expected. The F-302s hadn't prevented the kamikaze darts from destroying the chair at Area 51. The Hive was coming right now. John floated above the atmosphere, in a dark ship powered only to sustain his life. There was nothing to do, nothing, except wait. Wait for the moment to implement his final desperate plan. Sneak up to the Hive before it had a chance to detect his ship. Shoot his way into the dart bay, blow the ship, the Hive and himself to kingdom come with a tactical nuke. Not the sort of plan you want to ponder too much. Unfortunately, to prevent the Hive from detecting him, he had to sit in a powered-down ship, waiting for it to come close enough. Sit and wait. Sitting, waiting, and pondering were an invitation for regrets, and John had a few regrets. He regretted that he and his father had never spoken again from the time of their falling out to his father's death. He regretted that he wasn't closer to Dave. He regretted all the ones he could not save. Holland, Mitch, Dex, Ford, Elizabeth. He regretted that he wouldn't see baby Torin John grow up. He regretted that he would never see any of his family again. Taylor, Ronan, Beckett, Rodney. He regretted most of all the things that he did not, could not say. He regretted none of those unspoken words more than the ones that were not spoken to Rodney McKay. Oh, he'd hinted at his feelings, but never said anything out loud. He'd come close so many times, a lifetime of deflecting and hiding was not something he cast off easily, not even when Rodney had been on his deathbed. You love me? The way a friend loves another friend. John's stomach knotted with unshed tears. Rodney would never know how John felt. It was too late. He watched the Hive come closer, massive and menacing, in his window. It was time to get the show on the road. He powered up the engine and cruised slowly toward the behemoth. In their arrogance, the Hive was not shielded, and John flew unchallenged to the dart bay doors. A quick strike and he was in. No darts intercepted him. They were in position around his beautiful blue homeworld, ready to start scooping up his people to satisfy their voracious appetites. Regrets might haunt his last minutes, but he would never regret saving his planet from that. He landed undetected in the cavernous bay and broke radio silence. Stargate Command, this is Shepard. I'm arming the nuke. Do me a favor. When Atlantis shows up, tell Rodney. Tell him I said goodbye. I love you. As he contemplated his final solitary moments, the last thing he expected to hear was Rodney's voice. Shepherd, this is McKay. The end.
Don't know that I will, but until I can find me a girl who'll stay and won't play games behind me, I'll be what I am, a solitary man, solitary man.